It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, White Sox fans. My name is Brett Valentini, lucky enough to host yet another Farm System podcast, Sox Pop on the Farm. It's number 49 with my best friend, very best friend in Birmingham. It's Jonathan Nelson, GM, president of the team, the guy you want to talk to if you're talking Birmingham Barons. And a point here, we haven't traveled back in time. We've gone back to 49. You know, I want to keep the canon of Sox Pop on the Farm podcast very tight. I don't want there to be one that dropped out. We didn't get to do a dash one, so now we're moving back to make sure there's not any gap. I don't want any of you very faithful fans searching for number 49, and it's just not there. So all our prescient information isn't because 2 weeks ago we knew everything that was going to happen in the first nine or so games of the year, although that's the kind of analysis you can expect from Jonathan Nelson and sometimes myself as well. Jonathan, thank you for joining me. I know a big series starting off here, so I appreciate you making the time here.
Appreciate it, Brad. Yeah, I mean, I'm literally just coming up from the clubhouse, so visiting with everybody, and got a lot of White Sox folks in town as well to see this Double A club.
Yes, let's talk right off the bat about one player who you're familiar with, who even though this is going to run a couple days after the fact, we've got Jonathan Cannon making his major league debut, starting for the Sox. Pretty quick move up. He got a pretty good amount of time in Birmingham, then just a cup of coffee in Charlotte before. This is starting to become a theme with the White Sox, getting guys through Charlotte quickly and up to the South Side. But some thoughts, not that you just talked to him in the clubhouse, but some thoughts about Cannon and maybe what he can do and what he did for you in Birmingham.
Yeah, it's very exciting to see, you know, certainly the way the rapid pace in which the White Sox, and they've historically done this for a long time with some of their bigger prospects that they really want to sort of baptism by fire at the big league level. And you go back to even the Frank Thomases of the world. Yep. And, you know, even I think Mark Burley to a degree and Joe Creedy spent some time in AAA, but at the same time, you know, I'm excited to see what he's going to do, and I think it's the right thing. And you know, Paul Yenish, the farm director, is in town this week, and certainly talking to him. And I know that certainly not to, you know, cast a light on the overall global organization and sort of some turbulence here and there. But at the same time, I know that Birmingham, the AA affiliate, is sort of a shining star amongst the clubs within the system. And I know that they're very excited. So it's going to be very excited to see what Cannon can do at the big league level. And who knows? I mean, I think it's good to give a small taste of the big leagues. And, you know, if that's what the plan is, I have no idea. But and to get him back and to continue part of that development as well.
Well, the nature, I mean, it's certainly nothing specific to the White Sox organization, though we can't probably speak for all 30 teams. The nature of what the different affiliate and what the, you know, the power structure is, you know, it does always develop, you know, evolve. Certainly AAA, especially maybe the last couple of years for the White Sox, but maybe ongoing for some time, you know, it ends up being a spot where, you know, guys who have more major league experience. It's no longer just the must stopping point for guys on their way to the big leagues. It's not to say that you're always going to skip AAA and that Birmingham now is sort of the de facto AAA team for the White Sox, but the nature of it has changed. And that's something I'm sure you've noticed over time. I mean, you mentioned Frank Thomas, a very famous jump right from Birmingham for sure. But you know, it's certainly not the way it's necessarily set up, but I think it's evolved into something where it can be a little bit optional to make too long a stop in Charlotte.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, yeah, I mean, I've always been told that if you can make the transition from A ball to Double A, then you're well on your way to hopefully making it to the big leagues. That doesn't translate to every player, but it does. It's certainly consistent with what the White Sox have done, and what, like you said, whether the major league teams do, is that AAA is part of the development process for a lot of players, but it's also sort of a holding pattern too. Mm-hmm. For some of the guys that are that fringe, yeah. Easy to call up with injuries or what have you, and that's why you don't see a number of prospects stay at that level for a decent amount of time. And again, we could go through all the names, and all the years. Yet at the same time, I think the proof's in the pudding that White Sox fans recognize that Birmingham is certainly a springboard to the south side of Chicago.
Yeah. Okay. And another thing we don't want to miss, even though, again, a little time travel situation because this isn't quite going out on the night of the game, but the fact that Birmingham here tonight on Tuesday is going to be wearing the Jackie Robinson uniform top to bottom. It's an honor to be able to do. It's a wonderful decision to have implemented. And it's something that I'm sure impacts the players even beyond Birmingham's Negro League's connection. So it's got to be something special for each one of those players. You were just down in the clubhouse, so it's got to be a little bit of a different atmosphere, in addition to just the different look, a different atmosphere on a game like tonight.
It's obviously special for baseball. It's special for everybody. And, I thought Major League Baseball in 1997, when they retired the number 42 universally, that it was brilliant because of what, obviously Jackie Robinson, the contributions that he not only made to the game of baseball, but to America as well. But this is certainly one of those very special days. And it's always obviously at the beginning of the season, April 15th. And despite the fact, we obviously did not have a game on Monday, April 15th, Major League Baseball good enough to recognize that minor league teams start their series on the 16th and certainly want to contribute and honor Jackie Robinson with their own salute. We've done it for a number of years, and we certainly, it's weird to see the Barons uniform, the jersey and Dodger blue and everybody wearing 42 at the same time. I mean, it's so super cool, and I know that it means a lot to our players, and it's a very special night for our fans too.
All right, let's jump a little bit into, before we take our break, we're going to talk a little bit about pitching. We're going to talk a little bit more about hitting. But first off, we last spoke, again, time travel aside, Jonathan, the team was 0-0. A little bit better than that now. You'll probably take winning 5 out of 9. That's going to end up with a pretty darn good season when all's told. So winning 5 out of 9. A tough game to end the last series on a Sunday. We might get to that in the second half. But your initial impressions of the team, because this team, now that we've seen, since we last talked, we've seen all the roster layout, and your bearings are stacked. It's just a delicious roster, really, almost top to bottom. So pleased so far with what you're seeing from the team?
Absolutely. And I think our fans are too. And to be able to, again, so you recognize that, this is certainly a bright spot for the White Sox organization, for the fans and for the development. I think it's very special to have just the surplus of so many prospects on the same roster. And I, like we talked about last time, I've always thought winning is in establishing that winning culture and mentality and being in a position to maybe get a clutch hit or pitch in a very crucial, pivotal situation. All those things lead to positive development down the road that you'd love to see the White Sox somewhere deep in October have to go through those experiences. But very excited to see, and I know that, to get out of the gate this quickly is very impressive. And all the publications that you see about some of the more talented minor league teams across the minor league landscape, the Barons certainly, are among the top, six or seven teams in all of minor league baseball with a lot of aspirations and just a lot of excitement for us. So it's really fun to see. And I think that, we want to say, it's like I was telling Paul earlier, Yenish, that, while we want to see the White Sox certainly, excel at the big league level and all the teams within the organization do it, we're glad that, this roster right now seems to sort of be, sort of a building block for the organization for years to come, and to see them sort of excel at the same level, despite the fact that it's super early. Yeah. It's still, at the same time, it's exciting to see some positive play and to see some of these highly touted prospects that I think so many people, hang their hats on and have so much aspirations to see, perform and develop. and get ultimately to Chicago, I think it's very exciting to see, you know, certainly the results of what's happening right now.
Don't worry, Jonathan. I will insert all the appropriate, you know, post edit. I'll insert all the appropriate asterisks and caveats. It is early. It is early, but we're excited, and that stems a lot from just the raw talent on this team. Two of the guys that we have to talk about, because we have a combined 19 innings pitched and one earned run, both came in the same trade, both came right before the season. It's Drew Thorpe, who is, I guess, the de facto ace. He was your opening day guy, and also Jairo Iriarte, two guys who have just been tough as nails through two starts. It's got to be exciting, not just to see that kind of talent, but to see that, you know, they came over together, they came in one trade, and they're guys that really Chris Getz sort of earmarked for possible, you know, speaking of, Southside play as early as 2024. And I think most of us, when we heard that, thought, okay, that's pretty bold, but wow, a start like that, four starts in, you got to think, all right, maybe there is an express train to Chicago. What do you see in both of those guys? Because it's certainly impressive.
Yeah, clearly they were dealing. And when they had their season debuts here at Regions Field, that brief three-game series, it was, I'm not even going to say a breath of fresh air. I mean, it was beyond impressive. And, you know, is what you hope for. It was it was as advertised, is that these were two of, you know, cornerstone guys in that trade with the Padres. And, you know, tip of the cap to Chris Getz and, of course, the White Sox in regards to, you know, holding their cards and playing them as best as possible and getting what they needed out of the deal. Again, two, you can't rush to judgment, and, you know, a trades and acquisitions and development, all those things will ultimately be judged in deep down the road. But ultimately, at least out of the gate, very, very exciting to see, you know, the caliber and type of pitching that they bring to the table. And hopefully, you know, they'll continue to progress and we'll see where we go from here.
Yeah, just like you do want, if you had a choice, you want wins. You want the best case scenario, and really not to put pressure on those two guys, but this really was, to start a season, the best case scenario, and that's wonderful when you see that players can do that, whether they're 20-year veterans or, you know, just getting their first, you know, taste of Birmingham baseball. That's what you want to see. They pretty much delivered at 100%. That's a nice rate.
And for us to see the balance, you see quality pitching, and maintaining a really good rhythm for the game, and obviously, you know, for their performance as well, but also the hitting too. You know, some of the more impressive hitting, and you know, we always like to think that there's some magic about Regions Field when they come back here, and there's a little bit more of a comfortable feeling. So when we begin this six game series with Mississippi, so we'll have to see where this thing goes. But it, you know, the Braves always, you know, have a really strong, you know, obviously farm system, and some of the best prospects they've had at the major league level have gone through Double A. En route to Atlanta. So hopefully, you know, this will be a good, you know, again, part of the overall competition and development for our guys as we progress this homestand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, a big test for sure. Now, usually, Jonathan, we're going to talk about, you know, good stories, you know, happy stuff and all that. And I'm certainly not here to be critical in any way, but I do want to talk about a guy who has struggled a little bit because I just sort of want to see what, you know, what maybe the approach is. The pitching staff's been great. Jared Kelly's a guy who's been moved to the bullpen, struggled a little early, just early going. I mean, very small sample size, but a guy who came in as really a bonus first-round pick. He was a guy that the White Sox didn't think they could get. An amazing get there by Rick Hahn. Interesting calculation there. A guy who's a starter, sort of transitioned to the bullpen, seemed off the bat to do pretty well. Got an aggressive call to Birmingham last year. He's a guy who seems like he's going to be pitching out of the pen. Still very young. So it's an interesting situation with him because clearly he's still sort of trying to get his footing really at any level, and certainly at Double A, which is maybe the important level for him to do that. What's the approach there? And, you know, his attitude, obviously there's a very talented coaching staff there. It really is, again, sort of the center point for the White Sox organization, especially with Sergio maybe as your manager now. You know, do you expect to see, you know, finally maybe for a guy like Jared Kelly, you know, some of that development that we've been waiting on because the raw talent is certainly there, you know, going back to him being drafted out of high school?
Yeah, you know, certainly his career and especially what we've seen at Regions Field, you know, has had some rockiness to it. But, you know, really good kid. Love talking to him about Texas football when the times played the last couple of years. Yet at the same time, you know, hopeful. And I think that, you know, between Sergio, between John Eli, also our pitching coach, Kurt Hassler, who White Sox fans would certainly recognize in recent years as being the bullpen coach. I know he's a Rover now. He's in town as well. So I think between those three guys, when it comes to pitching and really, you know, making sure that everything between the ears are certainly, you know, on even keel and certainly the mechanics are going the right way, I think you got three guys right now at the beginning part of the season to get, you know, this pitching staff and some of the maybe the project players on it a little bit more aligned as well.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to take a quick break because we're going to move over to hitting. And boy, that's a fun discussion as well. Stay with us. We will be back with more Barons baseball for all your Birmingham Barons fans out there with Jonathan Nelson. Hang with us for a minute.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, White Sox fans, it is, well, somehow, I don't know how it happened, it tumbled out as podcast number 49. We're going back in time? I don't know. But we're looking forward because it's been a very, very strong early season for Birmingham, which really is the jewel of the organization, at least in terms of roster. Not playing favorites here, but when you look at the roster, sorry, it's indisputable. That is where it's at for the White Sox. And something that's been pretty exciting as well, especially given I know it's just been three games in Birmingham where it's impossible to hit, we're told. The offense has been pretty bold, and I got with a guy we talked about already, the first time podcasting together. Jonathan, I got to start with him again because Edgar Caro is mashing. I know he's there in Birmingham to also learn the craft of catching, work on that arm, work on the defense, work on handling pitching, but certainly a big part of all of that is hitting the ball. He has shown a power stroke. He's just mashing hell out of the ball, and it's just got to be exciting to see him right out of the gate be a hitter beyond maybe even what was advertised. Small sample size, but still awfully nice to see.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know, I think White Sox, you know, historically the catchers for the most part, you know, defensive minded and handles a pitching staff really well. And to me, that continues to obviously be his strength. But yeah, to get out of the gate from an offensive standpoint for him is just icing on the cake. And it just – even the first few games last year, if the White Sox acquired him during the season in the Giolito deal with the Angels, just a different sort of approach, different mentality, and very exciting to see that the way he handles the pitching staff. That's what I love, is the way he calls a game, the way he handles them. Is just proven to be, you know, and that's what you want. Obviously, hopefully he'll continue to progress and you know get to AAA if that's the next level or the big leagues. But ultimately, he's one of the more exciting players that I have quite high aspirations for, you know, in the future for the White Sox. I think that, and obviously it was a very short-lived existence for Giolito in California. To be able to get, you know, a player of his caliber and to continue to show that kind of development at his age is really something. So hopefully that bodes well for the White Sox in the future.
And you sort of alluded to it, and it was probably sort of a bonus essay question for a future podcast, but I'll bring it up now because we'll probably talk about it with other guys as well. Obviously, you want to see these guys in the big leagues. And, you know, in theory, a very short visit with you in Birmingham is perhaps good news, providing they're not going the other direction. But when guys do get called up, whether it's Charlotte or maybe straight to the White Sox, I mean, there's got to also be a little bit of bittersweetness there too. What's the emotions or what's the experience you have when basically you are packing up guys to say, all right, you know, I mean, it's exciting, but hey, you might not be able to get to see them again in your ballpark.
Yeah. And it's obviously the nature of the business. And, you know, I talk to the team every year when they arrive from spring training, and I tell them that, you know, ultimately, you know, we do not want them to be this, they're the final destination. Right. We want to see them continue to excel and get to AAA and ultimately get to Chicago and have a great, you know, major league career. So it is a double-edged sword. At the same time, I mean, it's just the nature of the business. And, you know, in years past, you know, in 2013, when we opened the ballpark, we ended up winning the Southern League Championship. Mm-hmm. We ended up, you know, Marcus Semien, who was called, I know, a sore subject for White Sox fans, mm-hmm. called up at the end of July, and he was replaced by a really hot prospect at the time who helped us and actually was the MVP of the Southern League Championship that year, Micah Johnson. And Micah was great. Obviously, he played at the big leagues for a little mm-hmm. bit. And didn't really, obviously, sustain mm-hmm. a major league career, but a great guy, great player. His thing was a second baseman, had speed and all that. Mm-hmm. But obviously, you know, what we hope for is that when we do lose a player, that player is replaced by somebody that can, you know, continue to carry the torch and raise the bar and everything that we do. That year, when Marcus was promoted to AAA, we ultimately thought, okay, well, we lost our heart and soul. I mean, he was the Southern League MVP. But ultimately, Micah came in, and we really didn't lose a beat. And, you know, ended up winning the Southern League Championship, beating the Cubs affiliate, and then ultimately the Padres affiliate.
Oh, that's the way to do it. You go through the Cubs. That's delicious. You know, I would squeeze my eyes really tight, and I thought I could see a little Ray Durham and Michael Johnson. But let's face it. Baseball is just a stepping stone to his art career. So, I mean, you know, let's face it. He got that out of his system, and now he can do the serious stuff, which is his art. Come on. You
know. Yeah, I know. He's I know he is quite an artist, and I know he is excelling at a different level.
He is. A guy that I think people were maybe a little surprised to get to have gotten the immediate call to Birmingham, but he is just a grinder. A lot of fun to watch, a definite favorite among some of our staff at Southside Sox. And that's Brooks Baldwin. He's a guy who just sort of does what it takes to win. He's, you know, among a number of breaths of fresh air there in Birmingham and some real talent, you know, he's a guy that maybe at first glance you think, oh, okay, big deal, but he surprises you.
He's picking it pretty good. And so, yeah, I mean, it's there's you know, our team is littered with some fresh faces, and he certainly is one of them. And so it's exciting to see. I mean, again, you know, so early, I temper my excitement and sort of enthusiasm and rush to judgment on so many of these players because, you know, it's not fair. At the same time, to get out of the gate the way he has and the fielding and everything bringing to the table, it's exciting.
I want to bring up a couple three outcomes players, very different players, but they sort of end up being these strange three outcomes guys. And a personal favorite of mine, he's got to do something about the swing and miss. But Wilfer Veras, I think, has got such mashing potential. And I know we've seen before, we had Mike Rodolfo. We've had a lot of guys come through the system where it's like, wow, he's going to kill it at any level. But Wilfred's a guy who, you know, maybe still in some ways struggling to settle out of a position. And, you know, again, a lot of swing and miss in him. But, boy, when the swing and connection's made, it's downright frightening and perhaps has the biggest offensive potential on a roster filled with offensive potential. He's a guy that, again, you sort of got to be excited at the potential of, especially if maybe that hole in the swing can just tighten up a little bit.
He really was one of those shock players last year for at least me.
Yeah.
You know, when he was here, is that you're right. I mean – he was doing things that you're just like, you're just scratching your head. You know, I don't really remember hearing about this guy. But all of a sudden, yeah, I mean, he's one of those sort of, I don't want to say raw because I don't think that's a fair thing to say. But I think that he certainly has the skill set that really has the potential to be something special. And again, don't want to go too far down the road with all that. But at the same time, he is one of those sort of diamonds in the rough to where you really could get something out of it. And what is he? Didn't he say he was like the cousin of Fernando Tatis Jr. or something like that?
Yes. There's definitely some heirloom there.
Yeah. So it's there's, but anyway, he's an exciting player, and when he's on, he is on.
And he has, if I'm not, I'm just looking it up now because, you know, this is the kind of podcast we present. He's got some sneaky quicks, too. The guy steals bases. It's like, wait, that guy should not be stealing bases. I mean, he's not perfect in efficiency. We'll get to a couple of those perfect efficiency guys. But, hey, you know, steal a bag. You know, you're a baller. Come on. Geez.
Like we said, you know, he's gonna do things that surprise you and scratch your head. So.
Speaking of dangerous speed and yet also sort of a three true outcomes guy and a very puzzling case because he's a speed guy and from – well beyond. I mean, I think I want to say going. I mean, I'm not a smart guy, Jonathan, but I do occasionally tap guys and I think I'm keeping an eye on him. Unfortunately, we got rid of one in Jose Rodriguez, but that's, you know, that's a whole different story and a different podcast. But and that's Terrell Tatum speed. And in a recent doubleheader, I believe it was just Saturday, perhaps, just had a mashing game. The guy brings speed. He can defend his position. The hitting for average is there. Again, sort of a little bit of hole in the swing, but also gets on base, you know, just amazingly. And he's a guy who has a little bit of footing already at AA as opposed to some of the other players we're talking about. So he's a guy who may be moving soon. But again, he got off to the start he needed to with the Barons to show he's got a future higher up in the organization.
When he was called up last year, I mean, he got out to a really fast start. And he is a electrifying player at times. And you're right. I mean, you know, and he's from Memphis. And when he came up last year, you know, I could tell, you know, he's certainly wanting to sort of take a measure and see everything. And I tried to talk to him about telling that Birmingham had better barbecue than Memphis. And I don't think he was buying what I was saying. I said, well, you got to give it a shot because Memphis obviously has good barbecue too. But regardless, he is the kind of guy that I mean, he brings a different level of speed and aggressiveness to the bases when he is on it. And so it's exciting to see what he is, how this year is going to be. You know, so many times you see at this level is that when players are called up at the end of the season or sometime during the season, you know, they have a tough time, you know, keeping pace with this level and, you know, and sort of things, you know, while they get out of the gate quick or maybe not, and things, you know, sort of get a little bit, you know, the rope is let go. And I'm not saying that's the case with him last year. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, I think that like you said, that the second season here is certainly one of those where probably things are slowing down for him. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that will lead to some really good and big things for him this season.
All right, speed. You cannot mention speed without a guy we made passing reference to the last time we talked, Jonathan. But he's a real game changer, and I thought speed-wise. And I thought, I mean, unfortunately, we had a lost season for Duke Ellis last year with injury. I thought with the rules being applied, not just to the minor leagues, but the stolen base rules to the majors, and I think we've seen a very strange fall off so far this year. Last year we didn't. I thought he's a guy who, you know, I know you can't, you know, you can't steal first base, but just the danger he brings, I mean, geez, this is a 100-plus stolen base guy. Duke Ellis is healthy. He's hitting well. He's got 10 stolen bases, and I don't believe he's been caught in 9 games. That's dangerous. It's just got to be great to see him back healthy wherever he goes from here, and I do think there's certainly potential beyond Birmingham. It's just got to be good to see him healthy. I imagine he brings something to the team beyond just that speed, but it's just got to be fun to see him sort of back.
Another Texas kid. another full circle for me because I worked with his dad, Bull Ellis, Robert Bull Ellis, in 1993 when he pitched with us. And he's a really good starting pitcher for us, and we ended up winning the Southern League Championship. Francona was our manager. Again, sort of a full circle type thing, but you're right. I mean, he has elite speed. Glad, you know, obviously I can only imagine how frustrating it was to have that indeed lost season last year. But he brings something different to the table. And to have those sort of table setters when it comes to Tatum and Duke, just a different level of speed. And again, it's just it's difficult to even suggest or describe him on the bases because it's mm-hmm. not even as if he touches mm-hmm. the ground. I mean, he mm-hmm. just sort of floats. But, you know, hopefully, you know, this will be another step in the right direction for him. He stays healthy. And but I would imagine that, you know, because of everything that's, I guess, technically, would this be his third year with us? That ultimately, yeah, because he was called up in the end of a couple years ago, that ultimately that this would be, you know, hopefully if he excels, that there'll be a route to Charlotte and maybe even beyond. So we'll see.
Okay, full circle when you are dealing with sons, offspring of other players. All right, that's one thing that's probably daunting. It's going to be downright scary. I don't want to speak for you, Jonathan, but it's going to be scary when you're working with a grandkid of a player. Now, you know, when that happens, you know, if you faint, it's fair. It's fair.
I feel like my existence these days is all about the full circles, whether it be every member of our coaching staff being players when I was GM, yeah, or whether it be Chris Getz being a player, yeah, for a year and a half here. So it's all those type of things, but it also makes you satisfied to see, whether it be the Duke Ellises of the world, to see a different generation to come through here. And to me, again, I think we talked about this last time, is that not only for the past players, but they always, you know, talk about how special Birmingham was as part of their development process, and about their just the places that they played at. So, and that's always, to me, beyond satisfying. And it doesn't, whether it be the Rickwood Field Classic, mm-hmm, or whether it be the Hoover Met or Regions Field now, it just to know that Birmingham will always have a special place in their heart, and they had, you know, just positive memories, is something that I know, mm-hmm, that at least, you know, I'm very satisfied and very appreciative of.
Got one more topic for the godfather of the White Sox organization. It's Jonathan Nelson, GM, president of Birmingham, and a connection, connected to everyone. You want to talk about 6 degrees of separation. He's 1 degree from everyone who matters in the White Sox organization. That's facts. Okay, crazy story. I'm not going to try and get you in trouble here, but I do want to get inside your head, or get inside the living room, or get inside the office there as you're watching the game on Sunday. Very challenging game for the Barons. A loss. And a loss that came with great frustration directed at the Blue. Sergio Santos, manager, I'm not sure if he had been, haven't watched closely every single game, not sure if he's been tossed yet, got tossed, along with a few other Barons personnel. What's it like when you're, whether at the field, whether it's right in front of you, or, you know, even when you're watching at any sort of distance, going through that, knowing you want your team to have a fair chance to win and produce the way they should. And, of course, everybody's human on the field, so mistakes are made. But it's got to be frustrating. I'm not sure if you're throwing things, you know, at a screen or anything, but it's got to be a little bit challenging for you because, you know, you want the best for these guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, it's the balance, too, because I work, you know, hand-in-hand with the umpires, too. When they show up in about another, mm-hmm, hour, I'll go down there and talk to them about where they're coming from, where they're going, and, mm-hmm, sort of, you know, preview the entire homestand. But ultimately, my loyalty and my interest reside, you know, in the first base dugout in the clubhouse with the Barons. And so it's one of those when a manager historically has gotten kicked out here, depending on what happens, I might go down to the clubhouse. And, you know, I'm not going to start telling tales out of school, but there could be a variety of emotions or, you know, invitations for me to sit there and talk for a while, whatever it is. But it's funny to also sort of go a recap, because some of these things, the managers know what they're doing, hmm, a lot of times, and what they might, you know, solicit the invitation to be kicked out. They know where they're going, they know what they're saying, and they have some pent up sort of frustrations along the way too. But ultimately, when it came to this past Sunday, you know, ultimately, you know, we never want to see things sort of get sideways and hate for those things to occur. And certainly on the losing end of things. But ultimately, I know that it's a long season and, you know, that's just one game, and we'll continue to steer the ship forward.
Yeah. And I don't want to skip talking about Sergio. I love talking about him. About, you know, getting close to 10 games in, first experience managing in the system, first experience managing at this high level, this close to the major leagues. Initial impressions about what he's been doing with the team now that you've sort of seen him in action, leading this group of guys.
Yeah, I mean, when you start out for your first three games, home games of the season, 3-0, everything's good. as the saying goes, winning cures everything. Yeah. But ultimately, what I told him, and I told him to his face in the clubhouse after one of the games, is that I he really connects with the players, and you can tell he has that great balance of certainly recognizing connecting with the Barons, I mean with the players, yet at the same time, you know, taking a step back and being that manager, that figure for them to guide them. And so I think he's got a great balance. I told him he reminded me of some of the great managers that I've been blessed to work with, whether it be Julio Vinas, who was our manager for several years, and certainly, you know, the manager for our 2013 championship, and of course Francona as well. Those kind of managers, and I've worked with so many great ones over the years, but those managers specifically, those two, had a really unique quality connection with the players and it just seemed like everything that the, and I hate to use the term, but it seemed like the right hand knew what the left hand was doing, and they were completely in sync. And so that's where I see with him is that he really has a quality connection, and not only connection, but in the development, but also, you know, pushing some buttons and knowing when to do things too. So,
yeah. All right, well, you heard him sort of preview it. So, I mean, I cannot keep Jonathan Nelson any longer. He's got to get down to the ump's room. He's got to make sure the spread's delicious. He's got to make sure the pillows are fluffed. Got to make sure those guys are taken care of. Everything's pressed and neat. Maybe even the shoes get shined. Because, you know, we want to have a good six-game series coming up. And, you know, you got to do the things you got to do. So, I'll let him go. Thank you again for talking with me, Jonathan. We'll do it again in a few more weeks and hopefully just talk about a lot more wins. And these podcasts will get to be maybe 2 hours long because we'll just have to talk about everybody. They're doing so well.
Sounds good. I hope that's the case. That's positive.
We definitely have some exciting stuff to be talking about in the weeks to come, including the Rookwood Classic coming up. So there's going to be some fun things even off sort of the very direct Barron's track. You know, we won't always veer into, you know, talking umpires either. And hopefully there will be cause to. So thanks a lot, Jonathan. Thanks for everybody listening, reading, watching and all that. Southside Shock going to try to continue to present to you the best minor leagues coverage out there. And, of course, it helps when you're talking to the godfather of the White Sox organization and the GM and president down there in Birmingham. Thanks a lot for the time again, Jonathan. Let's do it again in a few weeks.
Thanks, Brett. Appreciate it. I enjoyed it.